Good morning, everybody. It is November 5th, 2021. This is the ADK Homeroom. I am your host, Frank. Great to have you with us today. Great to be here today. These weekends leading up into Thanksgiving are always so delicious, right? So delicious. Everybody gets closer to each other. Everybody's nicer. Had some wonderful people on Twitter yesterday wishing me all the best with my mental health challenges. I think they were being sarcastic. Kind of do. But you know what? I'll take it in the spirit that it was not intended in and say thanks. Thanks to you guys for really caring so much about me. Yeah, I don't think they were really trying to be nice, though. All right, but it is. This is the fall, right? Things get harder and people lean on each other more. People pull together. Maybe instead of the fall, people could call it the gathering or something like that. Probably not. Fall's too evocative. Fall's too good. But still, it's just kind of great. My daughter has the day off of Nutcracker tomorrow too, believe it or not, for once. And we're going to go see Dune together. And I'm going to ask her what would happen if Timothée Chalamet and Harry Styles had a fight. I'm pretty sure she'll say Timothée would win because she is not a Harry Styles fan. But can you even imagine? Can you even imagine if those guys fought each other? It's like two stormtroopers fighting. Miss, miss, miss. I mean, maybe not. Maybe not. I don't know either of them in real life, but certainly their public personas are all about that pillow fight, right? I know in the movie Paul Atreides, he's a fighter, right? And Timothée managed to pull that off because he's an amazing actor. He's a world-class great actor. But even so, I kept looking at that movie and thinking, that guy's 25. Looks like he's never had a fight in his life. You know, they make fun of him for being like this adolescent, almost pre-adolescent boy, and he's 25 in real life. So I do not know what's going to happen in the sequels where he really has to get into the fighting, but I guess they can blame it on the Weirding Way or something like that. And what else? This weekend, my pirate son, the one-eyed guy, after he ran into a bench the other day. I mean, he's not really one-eyed. He's okay. But he had to come home early from school and the whole rigmarole. But he survived that injury and all the fortunate medical treatment that we were able to get. He did that so well. He's going to get a treat. He's going to go with his mom, maybe get a little toy this weekend while the rest of us all go up to Dune. So it's just a great time of year, right? My daughter went to the school play last night. And you know what? That's our first worst decision. We're talking here, our topic is the 7 worst decisions of the week. I'm going to make that the first worst decision because why do high school drama teachers pick such silly school plays to stage? Why are they doing productions of these plays that I have never heard of? Budget concerns? No, not budget concerns. Have you seen our school buildings? They are like palaces compared to the rest of their community. All right. And when I was in Buffalo, I was at probably the fanciest, richest private school out there, and its budget was nothing compared to the public schools. The rich public schools out there, they had their own planetariums in their school. They had their own wing-making machines for their shop classes donated by Boeing or bought from Boeing or some combination of the two. So this is not a budget problem. My high school still hires live orchestras to play with their high school play, their musical in the spring. They do a straight play in the fall and a musical in the spring. Yeah, it is not a budget issue at all. So why they're picking these plays that no one has ever heard of, right? I am just not sure why you need to see plays like Lolcat and Nyancat take over the internet. I mean, I'm kind of making that one up, but that's pretty much what it's come down to. So here we go. That was the worst decision number one of the week, is to stage these plays that people haven't ever heard of. I'm going to give you 10 straight plays that aren't musicals that you should do. teachers and just recycle these. Every decade, you come back to one of these. All right, here we go. Number one, La Reine Morte from Montherlant. You got to do it in English, though. This is amazing. My favorite line from this play, it's talking about, well, you can imagine what kind of character it was, this put upon, you know, martyr complex character. And it says, she walks around as if her soul was crucified upon her body. Oh, isn't that a great image? She slouches through life as if her soul was crucified upon her body. All right, so that's number one, play La Reine Morte from Montherlant. Number two, 10 Little Indians. It's so good. People will actually be interested in that one, and it's easy to do. Number three, Noises Off. Okay, this one is hard to do, but are you kidding me? Have you ever seen Noises Off? It's hilarious. It's awesome. The kids will learn. It's a challenge. They actually have to be good at their cues and everything. Oh, it's so great. Do Noises Off. I would love to see Noises Off. Number four, any of the major Shakespeare plays. The language alone will carry you through the play. Number five, Almost Maine. I mean, I guess, grudgingly. It's new, but it's good. I can do it. Number six, Clue. Again, you got the mystery thing going for you. It's relatable. People know it, and it's actually a good story. Number seven, Night of January 16th, which is a horrible title, by the way. Why did Rand ever make that the title? I guess it is clear, but not a good title. Still, you get that audience involvement. That is an amazing thing. It's like the spelling bee, right? Putting them in, you know, spelling bee for the musical play in the spring. You get that audience involvement. It's wonderful. Number eight, The Importance of Being Earnest, because it's so good. This one is hard to pull off, too. Another comedy, though, that's easy to pull off. Number nine, Arsenic and Old Lace. Just do it already. All right? See the Brewsters up there? It's got a huge cast. They can eat up the scenery. Arsenic and Old Lace is a play that can be done. You don't have to have any fine acting talent. Now, I've been lucky in my life to see some amazing actors in their high school musicals, right? Jeff Daniels went and saw Jeff Daniels in Kiss Me, Kate and some of his other high school productions. Some other professional actors in high school, you can't find, you know, great actors in high school. But Arsenic and Old Lace, you just need typical actors in high school, which are not super strong. And that play can still get carried off just fine. Number 10, anything by Molière. I love his work. Right? As Brian said from Breakfast Club, I love his work. So anything from Molière, obviously in English. Number 11, you know what? Let's go for 12. Let's go, Kate. Let's go first grade through 12th grade. Give you all 12 here. So you don't even have to do it by decade. You can do it by educational cycle. Number 11, Cyrano de Bergerac. Number 12, A Streetcar Named Desire. I know what's in that play. I know it's high school. Just do it already. Just do the freaking play. You think kids can't handle that? Have you seen what they are watching on Netflix? Oh, come on. Just do A Streetcar Named Desire already, please. So that's it. That's all you need. There's zero need to stage a play out there, you know, called Gatorade and Toilet Paper, The Intimacies, right? You don't need to be doing these plays that no one has ever heard of that is just going to be forgotten and that have no lasting literary value. Oh. You know, it's like you're in that high school band, you're in the talent show, and you've got a choice. You're going to do Unchained Melody, you're going to do some song nobody ever heard of, or are you going to do Seven Nation Army? Of course you pick Seven Nation Army. Don't do nothing anybody's ever heard of. There's a reason that nobody's ever heard of it. Don't do those plays, right? Don't do those songs. And you don't do Unchained Melody because nobody can sing Unchained Melody. I mean, almost. If you got Ariana Grande in your high school, then you can do Unchained Melody. All right, you got Ann Wilson in your high school, then you can do Unchained Melody. Otherwise, don't do it. Do Seven Nation Army. Anybody can play the guitar riff, right? Let the guitars carry it. Let the plays carry it. Don't rely on actors. Just let the plays carry it and let the kids learn from these great plays. I'm not going to list them again for you. It's a recorded podcast. You can go back and see it, but nobody in the high school is going to have an ensemble that can pull off The Crucible. Just put on a fun freaking show already. All right. That said, my current high school really does do a pretty darn good job of its productions. They put in the time, they put in the effort, and we do have some pretty good local talent. We have a couple world-class actors in the area that have come in and talked to my school, including one from Top Gun. That's right. One of the Top Gun actors lives right around here in the heart of the Adirondacks, and he's talked to our school several times. Can't wait for that Top Gun 2 to come out. Maverick. It's only 30 years late. 40 years? Nah, almost 40 years. 35 years. All right, so let's hear. Keep going with the worst decisions of the week. Number two, you knew, obviously, this is by far the worst decision of the week. This wins. We'll still do the other ones because they're bad too, and we should learn from them. But the worst decision of the week is obviously Henry Ruggs, right? The receiver formerly with the Raiders, they released him, decided to drive his Corvette drunk at 156 miles an hour. I guess he had slowed down to 127 miles per hour before he rear-ended this poor woman's. Her dog was in the Toyota also, and he rear-ended her vehicle. She died. The dog died. It is a tragedy. So obviously, all the obvious lessons are there. You know, don't drink, don't drive. I do think that I have some young and impressionable listeners out there. So, you know, don't drink, don't drive. And by the way, yesterday when I made that joke about my dog out there in the fresh Adirondack snow, snuffling around with her paws in her nose, and she comes up with her nose all white like Hunter Biden, you know, that's not to endorse cocaine. I've seen cocaine rip some people's lives apart, including students. So if you are a young and impressionable young person, don't take my joking about it as some sort of sign that drugs are to be trifled with. Not at all. Not at all, you young and impressionable listeners. All right, so back to Henry Ruggs. Obviously, you know, if you see that video of him sobbing after the crash there, he's just sobbing. This is a man in existential pain. And one of the takeaways from this is that airbag and that Corvette technology did some amazing work for Henry. They saved his life at 127 miles an hour in that collision. But do you wonder if Ruggs kind of wishes that it hadn't saved his life? He's got to live with this now. And if you watch that video, ooh, he was in a lot of pain. Let's go on here. Let's go on. Number three, worst decision of the week. Terry McAuliffe in the Virginia governor's race. He decided it would be a good idea to stake out a position that it's okay to steal a kid's education. That it's okay for him to say parents have no influence, no choice, no say over their child's education. It's all up to the public school system to decide what your kids learn. Terrible decision. I mean, I guess he thought it was okay, and it is worth noting that he still got 50% of the vote. 50% of the people out there thought it was okay that their candidate was saying parents don't get to decide what kids learn. Only teachers get to decide what kids learn. You have to wonder if Gavin Newsom out in California, if he had said that the schools own your children, would he have lost? Maybe. California is very different from Virginia. It's way more traditionally blue. But yeah, so I don't think that he really would have lost. I think that Gavin Newsom in California probably would have still won, even if he had said that, because California has gone off into the Pacific. They are out there sailing to their own drummer. And once in a while, they'll get something right, like their state legislature passed that law banning public schools from starting before 8 or 8:30 a.m. That's a good idea because, well, it's a good idea to not start before 8 or 8:30 a.m. I'm not sure that I'm going to say that it's a good idea that the state legislature had to get involved. But at least they were moving things in the right direction there instead of ridiculous start times like 7:15 a.m. That's not good for the kids. But once in a while, California gets things right. For most part, they are just Looney Tunes out there. So I think Gavin Newsom may have still won if he had made the decision that Terry did to endorse the public schools 100% taking over your kids' education. Related to this, Rachel Maddow last night, she did make a good point about the Virginia and the New Jersey elections. She pointed out that in the last 30 years, every time a president has been elected, the New Jersey and Virginia governor races flip the other way. Every single time, the year after a presidential election, New Jersey and Virginia both have always flipped in the other direction. And in that light, you know, it wasn't such a bad week for Biden. He's the first president in 30 years to be able to save at least one of those two states. So that's a good point, fair point. Haven't actually looked that up, but I assume Rachel is correct on that. So to me, though, that's just more evidence that the country, you know, is continuing its long, long slide into socialism, turning more and more socialist every single day. It's been going on really since the start of the country, right? One of my favorite stories about that is the Smithsonian donation. Do you know about that? How the Smithsonian donation went? So Smithson died over there in Scotland, and he had $500,000 in gold, and he wanted to give it to, according to his will, he wanted to give it to the United States to found some institution of learning or something like that. And you know what happened? This was like in 1830, early 1830s. Congress in the United States, a lot of the members of Congress said, "What? Are you kidding? The United States government has no business getting involved in something like that. You want us to take a gift from a foreign country and you want us to found a institution of higher learning or a museum or some sort of institute for knowledge, diffusion of knowledge? No, that's not in our power." John Calhoun, right from where? South Carolina, I guess. He said, "We can't accept this gift. We can't start an institution like this." Here's a quote. He said, "Can you show me a word that goes to invest us with such a power?" Right? The 10th Amendment was still alive in 1836. Holy cow. That's great. And then, you know, what happened? Well, pretty quickly, within a decade, there was some intermediate monkey business, really, where they like helped Michigan and Alabama buy some bonds, and Michigan totally screwed it up. But anyway, by 1846, the money was still there. And by 1846, just a decade later, Congress was like, "Oh yeah, okay, we'll take that. Yeah, let's do that. Let's build a museum type place. All set." So just within that decade right there shows you how much decay there was in the constitutional principles in the United States. It's been going on forever. It's just a long, slow slide into statism here in the United States. And in that light, I guess it's to be expected that at some point, you know, this trend of New Jersey and Virginia flipping is going to just end. And New Jersey and Virginia, like everybody else, are just going to start being blue, right? The red states already really aren't states. A couple of them are barely holding on to some old principles, but a lot of the red states, what we call red state now, would have been blue 40 years ago, 50 years ago. You know that's true. They're, you could call them purple states, I guess. You could call them fuchsia states if you want to get a hard spelling word. You know how to spell fuchsia? It's F-U-C-H-S-I-A. Great word, fuchsia. From a guy's name. So that's it. The trend has continued, and in light of that trend towards blueness, towards socialism, I guess you can see it as a momentary victory, a momentary pushing back against the tide for those of us who adhere to anti-statist principles and who believe that the salvation of humanity, no less, lies in anti-statist principles. This was a welcome respite from this seemingly inexorable flow toward an all blue, all socialist country. This was our little West Running Brook, right? That's probably the most underrated Frost poem out there. West Running Brook, I love it. West Running Brook, men call it to this day. To this day. Love that poem. Okay, so, you know, I guess we're already 50% of the way there for people thinking that, you know, in terms of McAuliffe's decision, that it's an okay decision to make. He's saying that the state owns your kids' education. I guess he's never read The Giver. I guess he's never read Anthem. Hell, he's probably never even read Ender's Game. And yet, people are out there defending him, people who have never read any of these things either. That leads into our next point, right? Number four, worst decision of the week. Right now, all around the country, many high schools are making one of the worst decisions in education. Right now, they make it every year right around this time, and they choose to institute this rule that as the first quarter ends, no student is allowed to have a grade below 50% recorded on his report card. You heard me right. Check with your high school. I bet they have this policy. They don't advertise it, of course, but check with your high school. All across New York, I've been in Buffalo, I've been in New York City, I've been in public schools, I've been in private schools, and the private schools do it less, right? The public schools, though, are all about this. They have this policy where in the first quarter, they make a decision to not let any kid get less than 50%. If you have a kid in your class, you know, you've got maybe a home ec class and your kid doesn't sew his basketball and your kid doesn't cook his brownies and your kid doesn't learn how to clean the washer and dryer and do the laundry. He doesn't do anything all period, all quarter. He gets a zero on every assignment. You can't put down a zero on his report card. You can only put down a 50% at the lowest. School's reasoning, of course, is that if you did put down a 0%, it's just too hard for the kid to come back from that. It's just too deep of a hole for little Johnny and little Susie to climb out of, and that would discourage them for the whole rest of the year. So we could never do that, you know. But this is a terrible decision to make, and this is, to go back to the previous point about, you know, the people that are supporting McAuliffe, even though he's got these terrible educational decisions, this is what allow them to support McAuliffe, because they don't know any better. They can be shouty and loudmouthed and foolish on the internet, yelling in their support of this ridiculous position, because they've never been taught, frankly, how little they know. They've never been shown how poorly they've been educated. They are so self-confident. They are taught that, you know, they deserve to have a super high self-esteem to, you go, student, you go, kid, no matter what. You know what? Some kids shouldn't go, at least not with the ideas and the abilities that they have right now. They need to sit down and get themselves better. Then they can go, right? Our schools are not showing kids what idiots they are in some cases. A lot of kids are great. But if you do no work for the first quarter, you don't deserve 50%. You deserve 0%. And our schools are not being honest with kids. They're not being honest with kids about how limited their own knowledge is. And it comes from the teachers, and it comes from the administrators. The teachers and the administrators, they are also too uneducated at this point to know how limited their own knowledge is. I've been there. I've been there for 25 years, watching after every single in-service day where some supposed expert comes in and talks about how the brain works, and then all the teachers in the school, all the administrators just take it as gospel. And sometimes it contradicts the experts that they had in there the year before. But every single year, oh, this is how the brain works. Oh, we know this is going to work. Oh, we know this is the magic solution. Oh, this is going to do it. And they never, ever stop to consider that they might be wrong. And that's what the kids pick up on. And that's what leads to the people who say, sure, teachers are perfect. They're absolutely right. There's no point in questioning them. They could never be wrong. So they are the experts. We have to listen to them. Parents don't get any say in education. And why would we give anybody a 0% when we can give them a 50%. Oh, so frustrating. Number five, worst decision of the week. Yesterday, Fauci denying responsibility for the pandemic. He came out, and maybe, you know, if you listen to this whole exchange between Rand Paul and Tony Fauci, maybe what Fauci meant is that he didn't cause the pandemic. But A, what he actually said is that he doesn't bear any responsibility at all for the pandemic. And I mean, come on, that's just absurd coming from someone in his position. And B, you know, he certainly does bear the responsibility for failing to stop the pandemic. And C, there actually, even if that is what he meant about causing the pandemic, there's actually no evidence that he's not guilty of starting the pandemic. And it's true, he's innocent till proven guilty. The burden of proof is on the accuser. That is as it should be. But come on, if this doesn't turn out to be a lab origin, then I'm going to eat a raccoon dog on the internet. I will record an episode of this podcast with me eating a raccoon dog. You get me a raccoon dog, I will cook it up and eat it on the internet waves, right? On the packets. I will be eating a raccoon dog. Okay, maybe... maybe it's not quite that convincing yet, but I'd honestly say it's 50-50. I'll have to walk that back. Not because I don't look forward to eating raccoon dog, though, but the evidence is certainly, you know, there's no evidence either way that's direct and undeniable. The circumstantial evidence is strong enough that you could easily rate the probability of a lab origin, if you're being honest, at 50% or much higher. Even Jon Stewart of all people, right, is out there saying it's obvious that it's from the lab. Doesn't mean it's genetically engineered, doesn't mean it was intentional, but, you know, you have a respiratory virus released into, you know, the world from the city where there is this giant, cutting-edge, risky respiratory virus research center. I mean, come on. Come on. What are the odds? But you have Fauci going on saying that even though he funded research at this lab, he bears no responsibility for the pandemic. And even though he's been in charge of the response from the United States to the pandemic, he doesn't have any responsibility. Fauci, that is, first of all, that's what we would expect him to say, right? Because what's at stake here? Basically, his soul is at stake at this point. And if he admits to any sort of perjury, he's going to be obviously in legal trouble, right? If he admits finally that he did fund gain-of-function research, then, you know, perjury charges could be out there. And if he actually admits to funding research that could have contributed to the cause of this, you know, talk about existential pain. Henry Ruggs killed one person. Fauci, if you admit that you did that, you can see why your brain would sort of self-delude out of that. Nobody wants that on their soul, that they help contribute even a tiny part to the origins of this pandemic. But he should at least be able to admit that he hasn't handled the response to it well, and that he does have some responsibility, that he has a ton of responsibility. He's been the nation's leader on this issue. He has responsibility to have responded to it well, and he did not. That was their one job. It's like Scott Norwood for the Giants. You got one job, kick the field goal, right? These guys at the CDC, the FDA, they had one job, prevent giant public health outbreaks, prevent pandemics, or at least handle them well when they do occur. And nobody out there thinks that this was handled well. No, it was not. So the honorable thing would be to step down. But of course, he's not going to do that. He's deciding to stay on there, which is absolutely ridiculous, right? Now, is it reasonable for him to step down? Well, it sure worked for Marcus Atilius Regulus, right? Who is Regulus? You probably remember. I hope you remember. This was the guy, and he didn't exactly step down, but he did the honorable thing. He did the honorable thing, right? Who was he? He was a Roman general fighting against Carthage, 257 BC. And then Carthage let him go to come back to Rome on his word of honor, to come back to Rome and give Rome some terms. Well, he went to Rome and he said, hey, Rome, here are the terms from Carthage, but you know what? Screw those Carthage guys. You shouldn't do it. You shouldn't agree to those terms. And then everybody in Rome said, Regulus, Reg, Reggie, you stay in here now, right? You're not going to go back to Carthage. And Regulus said, are you kidding me? I gave my word. And on his honor, he sailed back to Carthage. He didn't have to. And they tortured him, killed him, and he died, right? They put him supposedly in a box with nails in it, and he died. So in that sense, it sure didn't work out for him. But in the other sense of people still talking about him 2,200, 2,300 years later, that's an example of honor. Maybe too much honor in that case. But Fauci couldn't even have just a little bit of 1% of the honor. Can you even imagine? Can you even imagine anybody being that honorable today, keeping their word? Now, you can argue maybe you shouldn't keep your word if somebody's going to torture you and they don't deserve, they don't have the right, they're infringing on your rights. So what do you owe them? Yeah, you could argue that. Sure, 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 sure. But the point is, holy cow, the story of Regulus and the story of honoring your word and the story of being true to your parole, your word, you can't even imagine even one iota, one one-hundredth of that. Fauci can't even step down, can't even step down in the wake of the worst handling of a disease with a 0.2 mortality rate. As long as you're not already living in an institution, the mortality rate is 0.2%, and it's become this world-stopping crisis, and he can't even step down after that. He can't even admit that he bears any responsibility, his words, any responsibility. That's terrible. That is weaselly. That is cowardly. Fauci is a coward. Saw a great commenter the other day. I believe it was at Marginal Revolution. It might have been somewhere else, but he said, FDA delenda est. Yeah, I like that. FDA delenda est. FDADE for short. FDA delenda est. Our new rallying cry. We just have time for a couple more here. Number six, worst decision of the week, Aaron Rodgers. Don't play word games, Aaron Rodgers. Don't go out there and say you're immunized if you haven't been vaccinated. Sure, you could maybe play semantic games, but you know who plays semantic games? Fauci, and he's a coward. You're not a coward, Aaron Rodgers. Stand up for it. Just be honest. That was a terrible decision. By the way, Rodgers is like 37 years old. That's getting up there in terms of COVID. Hope he's all right. But again, 0.2% mortality rate across all ages if you're not living in an institution. So something tells me he'll be fine. Last worst decision of the week, Dr. Yoon. Dr. Yoon. Do you know Dr. Yoon from TikTok? He's got like 7 million views of his recent video on penis length. Penis length, right? He has this new video out talking about penis length, and it's related, he is pointing out, or he is claiming, to the size of one's nose. Okay, so look, that's not the bad decision to go on TikTok and make a video about it, because he's got 7 million views. That's a great decision. The bad decision is all these people who are believing him, and even him if he believes it, because it's based on just one study. Never listen to just one study. Science is wrong all the time. We have a reproducibility crisis. We have a data crisis. You can't listen to just one study. Now, admittedly, it is an interesting study, but it should be presented with a list of caveats as long as, I'll let you imagine how long you want it to be. But the study is from Japan, right? And some of the researchers are from Todai, that's Tokyo University. That's the number one school with a bullet in Japan. That is their number one university by far. But the lead author, I think, is from Kyoto. I think the last author is from Todai. A bunch of other authors in there. Japanese urologists, basically. Now, stop questioning their motives, right? I can see you. I can hear your thinking out there. You're the same person who wonders why people go into psychology and psychiatry, right? You see the psychologist, you see the psychiatrist, and you're thinking, why'd you go into this field, huh? Now stop it. stop questioning the motives here. All right? Okay. All right, so let's go on and look at this study. So these Japanese urologists, they measured something. Their main measurement here is called stretched penile length, SPL, in the English, right? SPL. And you know what the number one correlated characteristic they find with it? It's not nose size, which is what's being reported in this 7 million TikTok view video here. No, the number one correlated characteristic, which they report on in their findings, the number one correlated characteristic with stretched penile length is flaccid penile length. FPL is correlated with SPL. Duh. Duh. Wow. I mean, it would have been shocking if those two weren't correlated with each other. Come on. So, yeah, I guess we needed a study from these folks to correlate those. But the number two correlated measurement with SPL, stretched penile length, is nose size. And if you're wondering, large noses, the average penile length, stretched penile length, is 5.1 inches. And for short noses, it's a pretty big difference, 4.3 inches, right? That is, what, like 16%? That is a pretty big difference right there. So you're thinking to yourself, well, this is interesting because, you know, there's that phrase in the Japanese language, right? I took a couple Japanese years at the University of Michigan. My wonderful sensei, Tokiko Osiro, right? Great Osiro sensei. She told me that it's actually true that the Japanese sometimes refer to foreigners as okine no hito, right? Big nose people, okine no hito. Sorry for my pronunciation. It's been a long time since I've been in Japanese class. Sorry, Osiro sensei, if you're out there listening to me. So, I mean, the study comes out and you're thinking, oh, Japanese name for foreigners, big nose people, okine no hito. And the study comes out and you know what? Stop it. Stop it. Do not think that. These are forbidden pathways. Don't you remember what happened to Charles Murray? All right. So that's like looking up Kirk Weiler's fandom page. Never look up Kirk Weiler's fandom page. Do not do that. But seriously, the reason why this is such a bad decision, such a worse decision for people to be trusting the study, obviously it's just one study, and it's 126 people. 126 people. And only 123 of them were male. No, that's not true. All 126 were male. So putting this much stock in this study is a terrible decision. Okay, I need to end this episode. Stock in this study. Don't take stock in this study. Are you thinking of it? Are you thinking of Robert Herrick's The Vine, right? Robert Herrick's The Vine sees beautiful Celia or Julia or whoever he's talking to in that poem. And then the last two lines, I woke and found this flesh of mine more like a stock than like a vine. Oh, Robert Herrick. Did I ever mention I dated a direct descendant of Robert Herrick? Yeah, I did. Oh, my goodness. So don't take too much stock in this Japanese study. Poetry puns, the best way to end a Friday. I hope you guys have a wonderful, wonderful weekend. Take care.